This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer.
Welcome back to the Michigan Insider, Sports Talk 1050, WTK. The ticket online at WTKA.com. It's Thursday. It's time for the roundtable, but this is a different version of the roundtable. We have Seth Fisher. We have Craig Ross, but Sam is not here. As you know, Sam is covering the NBA PA Top 100 camp. He is down in Orlando, so he left the show a little early this morning to go cover some basketball, or as I like to say, he's just, you know, hanging out, watching some hoops. That's all he's really doing, right? Just scouting hoops, hanging out. Who doesn't want to just sit in a gym and watch basketball all morning? But we do have Seth and Craig. Good morning, fellas. How are you?
Morning. We're seven short of a minion, looks like. That
we're the next incarnation of the band, Three Live Jews.
There's the Beastie Boys and us.
All right, fellas. There may be a couple others, too. I think Half a Kiss and a few other bands. All right, guys. Yep. So great to have you here. So, Seth, first things first. We know as we're about to approach the month of August, Sam has been asking you for updates on Hail to the Victors. I see you are alive and well, so that is the first good sign. The second good sign, tell us about Hail to the Victors.
Yeah, I wrote my last piece for it last night, so we're still on target to go to the printer on August 5th. We've already printed out the covers. We have the Kickstarter going until tomorrow night, so I'm only printing limited editions this year. Like, I stopped the run about half the size of what we normally do because I just want to get this thing out and get it done. So if you want to make sure you get a copy, go to MGO Blog right now and get on the Kickstarter, or we'll forward that out again too. But, man, like, we don't have any Brian in it, but other than that, it's a pretty good one. Craig's article is great. We got Ian Boyd, who kind of went through what Michigan's good at on offense, which is more than people actually realize. And there's a lot more upside. Like, I kind of got a little bit more, not on defense, but I got a little bit more belief in Michigan after going through all this.
Craig, what's your article about? Just the headline. We don't want the full thing because we want
I wrote it so long ago, I can barely remember, but what... What year did I do? 1890?
It's like, yeah, it's the point right before the Big Ten forms. So right. Like Michigan plays Cornell, Michigan beats Cornell. Yeah. I'm telling everyone about. Craig, you can take it from here now if you remember. Michigan beats Cornell, yeah. And then the question is, are they going to be games, East or West?
He can probably give you some.
I was at the game, and this was a turning point, and it was an important game because no team from the East had ever lost to a team from the West. Not that there had been that many games, and they were mostly involving Michigan, but Michigan beats Cornell in a just considered to be a huge major upset in Detroit, and the celebrations went on all night, and so it's a big deal. But it's about that season, and there's a lot of interesting things from that year. I find the 1890s just absolutely fascinating, and Seth and I one of these days will publish a whole book about it because it's actually more or less been written.
But not edited. I thought it was really interesting that, like, Michigan basically upsets Cornell, but everyone knew that Michigan was good, who'd followed this stuff, but the East kind of pretended they were great. It would be like a Division II school beating Arkansas.
Well, I don't know the full timeline, and Craig, you obviously have studied it and know it a little bit better, but there was a window where until 1890 something or 1900 something that no non-Eastern players were like all Americans, right? Like they limited the list was very East-centric, yeah. and everything was still very, and I know the rules were adjusting in that window at times.
There was no rules. It was a guy in the East. It was just a writer from the New York Times going, "Hey, all right, here's who I like." He didn't know who was good in the West.
Yeah, I don't know who was our first All-American. It was. It's certainly the first All-American not from the East would have been a Michigan player.
He was a center on the 93 team, I think. But no one's going to care about that. The interesting thing, I think, was that Michigan was kind of like a D2 school that like beats Arkansas, right? And then it's like, oh my God, a D2 school beat an SEC team. It wasn't a good SEC team. It was like a bottom end of the their thing. But like Michigan thought, okay, now that we've done this, we're in. They're going to let us play them, right? We're going to get all these games now with Yale and Harvard, and like that was the big thing. We want to compare ourselves to Harvard. And the East response is, don't schedule those guys again. what are you doing?
It was William Cunningham in 1898, and you are correct, he was a center.
So that's
part of the magazine, but you have full offense preview, full defense preview, obviously opponent preview, all that in the magazine. MGO blog, and for those that don't know, which is probably hopefully nobody by now, it's mgoblog.com. There's a .com at the end. Although if you type MGO blog in your computer, I'm sure it'll pop up and take you where you want to go.
There you go.
Kickstarter is running out of time, so take advantage of that or get it now because, as Seth said, the
free copy ends tomorrow night, and then we'll have a few more copies to sell after that. I think I've got about 800 copies unsold at this point. That's it.
And then there'll be some sort of a digital version down the road, but we want print versions. There's something about the print version, like the week, 2 weeks before the football season. You know, and you're just reading it, flipping through it, reading the articles. I love the history articles in there. That's what I go to first when I get the magazine. So I look forward to that when I come back from vacation when the magazine comes out. But since we're on the conversation of football, guys, I got an email this morning. I asked Sam the question. So I'm going to ask you the same thing. So we got an email from Andy. And Andy, it's a kind of a long-winded email, but, you know, he's a lifelong Michigan football fanatic. And he, like many, he's paraphrasing, he's kind of been beaten down over the last few many years about Michigan football. And you know, excitement kind of gets the rug gets pulled out from under you, right? So that seems to have happened. So he asked a question. He says, I need a reason to get excited about football season. Lord knows it will end again with Alabama winning their billionth national championship. But from a Michigan perspective, I'm trying to look for any positive in regards to 2021. I need something more than wishful thinking. Can you help a fellow diehard Wolverine fan out? So I thought this would be a perfect question for the two of you guys. So Seth, I'll start with you. Can you offer him some hope?
Yes. Go get yourself a Hassan Haskins jersey right now. Because that guy, every single time Michigan like is in bad shape or they're not blocking people and they just like they're leaving an unblocked linebacker in the hole, what does Hassan do? Dodges around that guy, knocks that guy over, drags that guy like a cape for 10 yards, and then tries to jump over somebody else. So, I mean, like that guy is out there playing. And, you know, we only get a certain amount of time with these guys. So, like, you want to skip this year and be done? People are going to be talking about Hassan Haskins for years. Even if, like, Blake Corum passes him eventually because Hassan doesn't have, like, the greatest top speed, people are going to remember the way that he played. And those things, man, like, there are things from 2014. That was not a terrible season. There are things from that season that I remember really well from those players. And, like, this team is not that team. These guys at least play for each other. Aiden Hutchinson, man, that guy, he's awesome. He does awesome things. So there will be good moments. There will be bad moments. Like, I'm not expecting a great season here. But, like, these guys play for you, man. Like, this is your team. And it's hard not to, like, see a Hassan Haskins highlight and get a little bit excited.
That's a really good point. And remind it. See, yesterday, randomly popping up on Twitter, I'm not sure who tweeted out there, was the Devion Smith run from a few years ago where he gets lost.
Yeah.
Pops out of the other end, right? Yeah. That when you were talking about Hassan Haskins, that play, seeing it yesterday, kind of popped in my head. But we're gonna have moments like that. There's no question about it.
I mean, do you remember Brandon Miner carrying like 8 Penn State players? Like, that's what you had to do in order to move the ball in 2008, right? But do you remember? Because we all remember it. We remember those. And that was it's not going to be that bad of a season, right? So even when we're god awful, this is your team.
Yeah, I'm going to say this about Brandon Miner, incidentally, as long as you brought that name up. He was the best running back that Michigan had in one of Rich Rod's years, but he was running third on the depth chart and behind two freshmen. which he couldn't figure out. So he was about to leave the program. And he went into Lloyd's office, who still had an office at the time, and said, I'm out of here. And Lloyd said, no, you stay. You stay because eventually the coaches will figure out you're the best guy they got, because I know you're the best guy they got, and you know it, and eventually they'll know it, which turned out to be the fact. And in terms of this idea for that goes around about Lloyd running players off, in fact, he kept players here, including Brandon Miner. And I've never told that. I've certainly not told it on air. I don't know if I'm authorized to say it, but what the hell, I'm saying it. I've said it now. In terms of being excited about Michigan, yeah, I mean, I'm a Cleveland Guardians fan. I was a Cleveland. Now, Guardians is the dumbest nickname ever. They stole it from a roller derby team, which is perfect Cleveland, I think. But the, you know, I was their fan for 30 years, and they finished last for 30 straight years. But, you know, every April, I was just as excited as the year before. And there's something energizing about rooting for a team that maybe just isn't the best team all the time. You root for Alabama, so what? Alabama's having trouble selling tickets. Incidentally, the I noticed, and I don't know what you guys think about this, that Michigan has sold 80, as of last week, 85,000, I think 148 season tickets, with some tickets dribbling in with the freshman class. So my guess is they may end up pushing 90,000 in season ticket sales. The all-time high is 93,000. And at Ohio State, and that consists of 67,000 non-student tickets. Do you know how many non-student tickets Ohio State has sold? 42,000. We've sold 24,000 more non-student tickets than Ohio State.
Greg, are we counting the ticket packages, like the half?
I don't know. No, I don't think so. I think
the way it was announced, it said 85,000 and change season tickets. Plans. Even if they're split, it sounds like that's the season's worth. So even if you have two different, like two half plans, that would come together to create one plan.
Well, I'm just pointing out that people bought the half a season plan.
Yeah.
Because they priced that at the same price as a regular Ohio State ticket on the secondary market.
Right, because they wanted to buy it for one ticket. So we're going to see how that translates.
And there's a lot of tickets for sale for some of those other games.
Correct.
Well, Dave Abloff said there's only 5,000. He said Indiana, Ohio State are sold out, and at most to any other game, there's 5,000 available tickets. Now, this stunned me, and it's a lot better than what Alabama is doing, and it's a lot better than what Ohio State is doing, if you believe these numbers. And so the issue for me is, you know, winning every game all the time, it's pretty boring. It's boring.
No, it's not.
And to me it is. And so would I rather root for, well, I'd rather have my hands cut off than root for Ohio State. But I mean but rooting for the Cleveland Guardians was a lot more interesting, a lot more satisfying, even when they were last all the time. And I think there's reason for hope for this team. And it isn't just Hassan Haskins and Aiden Hutchinson, who certainly are remarkable players. There's other guys on this team. The hope is we have no idea. Last year was a 2-4 season when every conceivable thing that could go wrong did go wrong, and I doubt if that can happen.
I mean, if you're in range of this radio signal right now, who else are you rooting for? I mean, are you a Lions fan? Is that what you're going to be watching this fall?
I am.
There are Lions viewers and Lions fans. If you are actually letting the Lions determine your happiness on a Sunday, then you got problems, sir, and I can't help you with that. I mean, Pistons and Red Wings, that's kind of cool to root for right now because, like, they've got some bright futures coming up, but that's future. Yeah. Like, that's kind of where Michigan's at, too. They got some future to work. There's nothing to hate about this team. You know, the Tigers are fun to root for right now because all of a sudden they can win. I could talk Tigers too if you guys wanted me to, but it's not a hateable team. These are likable guys, and not I don't think that has always been true. Certain Michigan teams, I was like, I can't, I'm having a hard time finding people to root for. But like in 2014, I was rooting for Devin Gardner. That guy I liked, right? Devin Gardner, if anyone sees that guy in a bar, buy him a beer. Tell him, here's a beer, sir. I don't care if he's got 40 of them in front of him already. That guy played for Michigan and took some hits for us. But like a lot of the other guys on the team, I was not, I didn't think were that great, and I didn't think they were playing that hard. And certain other stars in that team, I didn't think were playing as hard as they could. So I mean, that was the hardest team to root for. I think this team's going to be a lot easier to root for than 2014.
Let me throw in. So on Monday, we did our show live from Jim Harbaugh's golf outing. And then after we were done with the show at 10, that's when actually people started filing in because of the schedule change for the event. But as we started talking to Jared Irons and Chris Hutchinson, you know, some former players, and then we started talking to some of the assistant coaches, like I started getting pumped up. And it wasn't this that I was like drinking a bunch of Kool-Aid that, oh, I heard them say this guy's going to be great or that guy's going to be great. It wasn't that. It was more just, you know, seeing faces and seeing smiling, friendly faces. And just, there was just an excitement level. And I kind of, and maybe it's because we're, you know, 37 days now until the season. I don't know what it was, but I started getting a little bit more pumped up than I was when I got up at 3:30 in the morning Monday to drive out to Orchard Lake Country Club. Really, you know, I was a little tired. I wasn't very excited, but as the day started going on, I'm like, yeah, football, man, I cannot wait. I'm looking forward to like my summer vacation. Don't get me wrong, but I'm like, man, football season. Doesn't mean that I all of a sudden think they're going to go 12-0 and, you know, play in the Big Ten championship. It's not about predictions or results. It's just, and so maybe it's like what you're talking about, Craig, where just, you know, hope springs eternal. And so it's just, so I get that feeling, but he wanted a little more substance to that. So I agree with you, Seth, that if nothing else, there are specific players that you'll be able to point to and they're going to give you moments. Dax Hill, right? Aiden Hutchinson, Son Haskins. Mm-hmm. There will be others. But those, you mentioned a couple, and I'll throw Dax in as well because you didn't mention
him.
Either the defense and the, you know, in the back, right? They're going to make plays, and they're going to be exciting, and they're going to play hard. Like, I get that. And that was something that Ron said, and we played the Ron Bellamy segment earlier this morning. Sam asked him more or less, you know, compare the energy at, you know, practices. So spring ball would be his, you know, what he can compare. Compare the energy at spring ball to the energy at spring ball practices you brought players to in the past. And Ron's like, yeah, it's different. And there's a different energy level. And, you know, even if it's, and he even said, it's just the young coaches coming in, whatever. There are changes. Things do feel different. Now, how does that manifest itself 37 days from now? We can't answer that, right?
Yeah. But, I mean, show me what the team looks like after a loss.
Correct. But absolutely. And that's, so it's still, it's just this, the talking point. And we've had many people, the talking moment in time, we've had many people say, just do, don't talk. Well, all they can do right now is talk because camp hasn't started and games haven't started. But I do get this sense of a renewed energy. People talked about it after Jim Harbaugh's press conference at Media Day in Chicago that it seemed like he had a little bit of jump back in his step. Maybe we're all reading a little too much into all these things, but this goes into me. I think that this, I get a little smile on my face right now knowing football in 37 days doesn't mean results, but it does mean I'm happy to, you know, and then of course the other part of it, Seth and Craig, the fans are going to be back together. We actually get to whatever the number is. We're all coming back together to have fun.
Yeah, don't you miss this? I mean,
that, like, to me, that is nothing else. I miss that. That to me is the excitement of the season. Is I miss being with our friends at the corner of the stadium in Maine at the games in the stadium. The things that we didn't get to do at all last year had nothing to do with wins and losses, right? If nothing else, that returns.
Do you remember the Penn State game in 2014? Like, that was the nadir of everything, right? Now, at that point, we'd already had the rally on the Diag. We had not gotten, we did not actually know that Brandon was going to get fired at that point, right? And there was just this, and a lot of former players came back and talked to the players in the locker room and said, hey, you guys play for each other. You don't play for, you know, you play for the school. You play for the fans out there. You're not playing for, like, all this, right? And those fans are behind you. And, like, that was, we were talking about trying to have a rally, but every single time we tried to do anything to do something real, to have the fans really show their support for the football team, without Dave Brandon kept on inserting himself, right? We tried to have like a rally and Dave Brandon actually like tried to take over the rally and killed it. So we couldn't even have the pep rally and we ended up just sending the former players.
I'm Dave Brandon.
That guy. So, that was Friday night. Now Saturday night, like we go through a whole day worth of tailgating. And then you go into that stadium. They've got those stupid blue uniforms on, right? And then they play Rocket Dog, and Dennis Norfleet starts dancing to it, and we're all in. And then, like, they're playing this tight game, which is so stupidly coached. I mean, Brady Hoke and James Franklin should win a co-award for worst coach game ever, for both of them, for that game. But Devin Gardner is sitting on the sidelines, you know, just losing it, because he's getting his guys riled up, and we're losing it with him. And, like, there was just you can't say certain words on the radio, but, you know, bleep it. Let's just root for our team. That just permeated that whole stadium that night. And, you know, it was a dumb game. We won it dumb. Like, they remember that, like, and they had dumb passes too. Remember that, like, the touchdown pass in between two of their guys because one of their guys just decided not to play it. Like, it was just a dumb game. But, I mean, that is the nadir. That's as low as it can get. And you're still in the stadium. You're still got players who are very, very much worth rooting for. And, you know, that's what we all came here for in the first place. So as much as they're going to try to put all the crap around it, and that's going to bring you down, and, like, you know, caring about national and, like, okay, Ohio State and Alabama are going to go to the playoffs again. Yeah, we can't change that, right? The people in charge of this thing are dopes, and they are going to try to ruin it any way they can. They cannot take away the core of what's great about college football, which you get in that stadium. Those players are playing harder than they're ever going to play again, even better, harder than they're going to play in the NFL. And they're doing it for your school, and you're right there with them. They hear you. You hear them. And there's nothing like that spell. There's no other sport like football that has that kind of interaction going on, where you can palpably feel the intensity of the players who are playing the game for you, and you're right there with them. How do you not miss that?
Yeah, Jared.
Well, it's
a great point. When Jared spoke to us on, and we played the interview, I think it was yesterday morning, and he talked about, you know, for the players, right? You know, if you know, to go talking to the players now, like, very few players get to experience this, right? And you don't necessarily appreciate it in the moment. You start to appreciate it more after. And I think that's what last year did for me. Is it's not about the wins and the losses, right? It was not a good football season last year. It was not about the wins and losses. But when you're in it, maybe you don't quite realize just how much fun it is to get up in the morning. And my mornings are early for like a noon game. I'm at the corner at 7:30 in the morning or whatever it is, 7:15 in the morning. I don't care. It's great. You don't realize how much you take, the little things you take for granted, like going to a football game and the things that you can control, which is being loud or just having fun, right? You take the things that you took for granted that were gone last year. I do think that's why the numbers are high for a lot of places that are selling tickets. And if the numbers that we've seen that Craig was talking about are accurate, and what I think the town will be like, at least for the first game, because I think on the first game day for the Western game, because it's a MAC opponent, it shouldn't be that big of a deal. It's just an opening game. But this town, I think on that day, is going to feel like the buzz of the 97 Ohio State game or something like that. People are just going to be, it's going to be palpable, the excitement for people just to get out. Mm-hmm. And that to me is the excitement of the season at the beginning. And then we'll get into football as we start fall camp and we read the Hail to the Victors preview when we get it and all that stuff. We'll get into it. But to me, like, it's almost secondary right now because the primary is just, we haven't done all those things in nearly 2 years.
Yeah. And it's more than that. I mean, I agree, Ira and Seth, your riff was terrific. But you know, it's even more than that somehow. It's, you can't let wins and losses define who you are exclusively, right? And you can't, I mean, Michigan has to be Michigan and continue to be Michigan. And a part of that is a sense of community and it's going to the game and cheering and cheering for Michigan. And yeah, it'll come back. Michigan at some point will come back. And when it does, it'll be sweeter than ever. As I said last year, you know, the old Bette Midler thing about in London, it's always 1939. In Ann Arbor, it's always 24-12. and that's how it should be. So,
all right, guys, before we wrap up the football conversation, we got a message in here on our Ticket TV from Chris. He says, the talent level of Michigan right now, in my opinion, is better than any team from 2008 through 2014. Fans are frustrated because of the expectations we all had in 2015 when Coach Harbaugh arrived.
Yeah.
So we talked a lot about the inability to replicate maybe the defensive players they had on the 2016 defense, that kind of thing. But what do you think about that from 2008 through 2014 versus now? Although I think a lot of it we have right now.
2018 was my 2018 team was way more talented, and the 2019 team was really talented too. Cesar Ruiz, you know, Mike on way new. Like
this team though, right now is more talented than 08 through 14. We know we've had more talented teams between 15
than those teams. Yeah, I mean they had quite a collection in 2011. Like they kind of accidentally put together a good team. They had some severe lack of talent on the defense, but like we don't have a player like Denard Robinson on this team right now. Like you don't get one of those guys very often. But yeah, I mean like I could see it. The Harbaugh teams have not really lacked for talent. They've lacked for talent in certain spots. Right, they missed defensive tackle. They missed cornerback, and those spots are particular spots. Those are specific spots because those are spots where you can actually see the talent ahead of time, right? Like you can tell a cornerback is going to be good to a certain level, right? Like Ohio State gets guys who are just ridiculous athletes. They don't learn a single thing. Kerry Coombs is probably one of the worst on-field coaches in college football. All right, that guy's not going to develop you at all, and you could tell because anybody who played for Ohio State, unless he transferred there after playing somewhere else, his NFL coach is like, what did you teach this guy, right? Like look at the Lions complaining about Jeff Okuda last year. Like, this guy does not know how to play football, but he's athletic enough that he just, it's fine. Put that guy in single coverage and it works. And defensive tackle, there's not a whole lot of 300-pound guys who can move. You're 300 pounds and you're athletic, you know, they can teach you a few things and you're going to be a very effective defensive tackle. So those guys come off the board really fast. You could see them early. And so Michigan's fighting with everybody else with, you know, and Don Brown did not want to fight those battles for those guys. He would rather go and try to, he tried to moneyball it. And, you know, that didn't work for him really at Boston College. If you go and look at his teams there, those were great defenses who get shredded by Clemson. Because they didn't have the talent to stand up to duo when they got when they got double teamed, and they just did not have the talent to stand up to receivers who were as athletic as Chris Olave. Michigan's fixing that. It's going to take some time. It's not going to happen this year, and you cannot get around your talent. Your offensive line is going to determine how good you are. I know I've been talking already a whole bunch, but I just wanted to make a quick point. Michigan spent half of their snaps in offense last year, half of them, either in third and long or trying to come back. So half of their snaps, when they snapped the ball, a run for 6 yards was not going to help them. You can't run your offense like that. And we've never had a year like that in my charting that was anything like that. So we haven't even seen what this offense can do when they can do what they want to do because they were in such a hole. And that might be true again this year, but at least, I mean, they're going to prep for it. I don't think they came into last year thinking, we're going to need Joe Milton to pass us out of deep holes all the time.
All right, go ahead.
I was going to say, do you need to take a break, Ira?
Go ahead. We're good.
I mean, one of the things we keep hearing is the noise out of Schembechler seems to be that Mazi Smith is really doing it. And I guess I want to ask Seth, how much of a difference that makes. If they're going to run this old 5-2 bow defense with Mazi Smith at the nose, and he really can play that position, does that make it plausible for this to be a really good defense, in your opinion? Or is this just, you think, just noise?
It takes more than one guy. Linebackers are going to have to identify. Hinton's going to have to get upfield. They're going to ask these guys to do a few different things. I think defensive tackle is just going to be better just because you've got the meat in there. Michigan was trying to get away with faster, smaller players on the interior, and what they ended up having to do because they couldn't do it, because like Carlo Kemp was fine. Carlo Kemp held up. The guy next to Carlo Kemp was not really doing his job, and even when they had somebody who could hold up to a double team, that guy couldn't get into the backfield. So it's really been since Mo Hurst that we've actually been able to have the players to play the kind of defense that Don Brown wanted to play, which is a fantastic defense. And Don Brown's a fantastic coordinator. It's too bad it didn't work out. But Michigan was basically taking Aiden Hutchinson and Kwity Paye and making them play further inside. as well as some of their outside, in order to make up for the fact that they were getting killed. And then the linebackers started breaking down too. And it all broke down last year because they could not hold up on the inside. And they had to cheat inside to do it. And they lost all the things that were great about the defense that they were running, which is, if you can't run inside because Glasgow and Hurst are there, you have to go outside, and then you're just testing Devin Bush on the edge. And that was what was great about that defense. This defense is totally different concept. This defense is going to be, look, you can't run the middle because there's already somebody there, right? I don't care if it's Mazie Smith. I don't care who it is. Jordan Whitley, whatever. As long as that guy is there, you're not going there, right? There's just too much meat. So your options are try to run outside. Hi, Aiden Hutchinson's there. Right, or David Ojabo, right? And then if you can get the edge on those guys, that's how you can beat them. Teams will run a lot of motion against us, and the teams are going to try to throw against us a lot because we're going to run a lot of crazy zones. So I think one of the reasons they probably did not want to show their tape in spring is they're going to have a lot of and I'm killing myself because I'm predicting something they haven't done yet, but they're going to do a lot more weird zone coverages, some of the things that Indiana was doing last year where you don't know where the guy is. And I think if you have the intelligence to run that in college, you can be a really effective defense. College quarterbacks do not know how to vamp like that. Like, only the good NFL quarterbacks do. A good NFL quarterback will shred you, but how many of those are we going to face?
All right, guys, really fun conversation here. A little more football to get to on the other side. Plus, we're going to get into some basketball. It's draft day. Wolverines have some players in the draft. The Pistons have the number one pick. We've been talking, needless to say, a lot about that here on the show. I'm coming for that number one spot. Even though Sam's not here, I'll still play it for him. All right, more with Greg, more with Seth on the side of the break here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK, the ticket.
Yeah, that was good. That was good, Seth. I mean, it. You know, it's a great question about being a fan and whether you have to win. I mean, for maybe casual fans, you have to win. I don't know.
Figure if you're listening to WTKA on, you know, July 29th, you're probably one of
us. A casual fan? Yeah. Yeah,
you're
probably right.
Yeah. Yeah, you're as deeply embedded as we are, and you're not getting out of this. So you can, of course you're going to get down. Like, it sucks that we keep on getting beat down by Ohio State, and that Ohio State has only gotten better since then. But
it'll change. It'll start to change. I mean, if these ticket numbers are right, Ohio State fans don't seem bored.
No, winning's not boring.
Well, I don't know.
Have Yankee fans gotten
on the buying tickets except for this year
to one game? That's what the Ohio State people are doing. They're spending all their money to buy tickets for one game up here, as opposed to buying their own season tickets.
That could be.
I mean, wouldn't you?
Probably not, but it's probably happening.
I mean, if I was an Ohio State fan and I saw Michigan was selling Michigan Ohio State tickets for $290, and I just have to, like, you know, offload an NIU and Rutgers ticket or something afterwards.
Yeah, and maybe you make a couple bucks back, maybe you don't, but you don't really care because you got your Ohio State ticket that you wanted anyway. Right.
It could be. I mean, it wouldn't stun me at all to see the stadium half Ohio State.
It has
and of course,
been every
with
year
red,
for
more
for like a decade and a half.
Yeah, and it's that is depressing, but that's on us. I think mostly that's on more on Michigan than anything
well,
else.
Well, I mean, Michigan could fix that by selling Ohio State tickets for $150 to Michigan fans.
Yeah.
You can find Michigan fans who are going to go to that game. They're trying to maximize their value first, and once they've got all of that, right? Once they've got as much money as possible. We even talk about this on the air. I don't know if you want to, but, like, did you see what they're doing with the GLI?
Yeah, it's at Yost and Munn.
It's at Yost and Munn, and they're not Michigan and Michigan State are not going to play each other. So really,
it's the old showcase, but instead of Minnesota and Wisconsin, it's Tech and Western, right?
Yeah. So yeah, it's basically they added a Tech and Western home game to both Michigan and Michigan State schedules. But they did not add them to the season ticket schedule. So if you're a season ticket holder, you don't have tickets to two Michigan games at Yost Ice Arena versus two regular Michigan opponents, right? It's Western and it's Michigan Tech.
Yeah, that's obscene.
Yeah, well, I mean, maybe Michigan has to amend how they did their season ticket package, but this announcement came out after the season tickets were first put out there.
So offer them to the season ticket holders ask the season ticket holders if they want their seats for those games.
Correct. Yeah. That should be an option. That should be the first option. The second thing is, and I was talking to a buddy of mine about this, he wants to buy, he's thinking about buying hockey tickets, but his son's in sports. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I need the schedule. And the schedule, you know, we're about to hit August and the schedules aren't out yet, right? We know who our basketball opponents are and our hockey opponents are, but we don't know when the games are. And people are still thinking about buying tickets. Our renewal for football, for basketball tickets is the end of the month.
Mm-hmm.
And the schedule come out where all the games that you want to go to conflict with, you know, Grace's schedule, basketball schedule or something. Like,
yeah,
it's, there are a lot of conflicts. People are trying to make these decisions. It's really,
yeah.
All right, we're coming back on live on the radio momentarily, fellas. Thanks to everybody for sticking around during the break on the stream. And David, we'll ask your football question first, then we'll get to a little basketball. We come back here. Welcome back to the Michigan Insider, Sports Talk 1050, WTK, the ticket online at WTK.com. We'll get into a little bit of basketball talk with tonight's NBA draft. Just, what, 10 hours and 17 minutes away, give or take. My math skills are not usually this good this morning, this early in the morning. But that being said, we got a football question here from David, who asks us, talk quarterback battle. I'm very interested in who wins that job. A lot of solid talent in that room. I mean, we haven't, nothing's really changed, guys, in the last, right? Like, since this, you know, conversation's been had, like, we know it's Cade, and he's the number one guy, or he's leading it, the number one guy. We know that you've got JJ and Vallari and Bowman behind him in probably that order right now. But nothing's really changed from what anyone said in the last couple
Bowman
of months.
Bowman will be ahead of Vallari, I think.
Eventually, yeah. But he hasn't had any practices yet. And yeah. Jim lined it up based on, obviously, how many practices yet. But it is an intriguing room. It's an interesting room. Obviously, not a lot of experience, but it's an interesting room.
Yeah, I think it's really hard to know. I know that Harbaugh said that Cade is number one at this moment, and that certainly makes sense. And I know that's what Seth, I think, believes the outcome will be. But we don't know because Bowman hasn't taken any reps yet, so far as I know, and won't for a while. Whether he can get up to speed that fast, I think, is highly problematic. You know, J.J. McCarthy, we all have hopes for, but he is a freshman and he's a way away. What bothers me about Michigan quarterbacks, and this is a longstanding thing, and this goes back to pre-Harbaugh, was my question about hiring Harbaugh in the first place, is we don't have a quarterback who can run a read option. At least I don't think so. And we don't seem to have a quarterback who's really going to run RPOs particularly well. That puts a whole lot of pressure on the offense when you take that element out of the game, and it's an element that I think most college teams have. When the quarterback's a runner, now all of a sudden you're stressing the defense in a way that a drop back quarterback can't. But you can mitigate that if the drop back quarterback can run RPOs to some extent.
I mean, we don't have enough data on McNamara, but McNamara, he's a Shea Patterson kind of player, a take 4CA kind of guy. He can move, so here's what we know about McNamara. We had two drives against Wisconsin, one good, one bad. We had one drive against Penn State before his arm was destroyed, and that was a good drive. So two or three drives that he's played against real competition, and then we have a Rutgers game. And when he came into the Rutgers game, they were not running their up. They were running these fake reads with Milton and getting their running back swallowed because everyone knows it. They went back to the dumb Army game plan, right? Where like they're pretending to do reads, but they're not really going to. And as soon as McNamara came in, they started running the offense again, and he was making the RPO reads, and he was. Like that was Michigan's offense. So maybe he does run it, or maybe that they won't do that because they won't do that with their starters because that's just a Harbaugh thing. Mm-hmm. But like McNamara can run the offense. I don't know if Bowman can. I agree with you that Bowman probably is not going to be doing those kinds of reads, but you probably run different things with Bowman. You probably want to just do a little bit more airway kind of stuff with him. And then, you know, if you get down to JJ, anyone in college football ever can just run mesh all day long. That play is so broken. All you need is a strong-arm quarterback who can be accurate and who can vamp a little bit if it's covered at the beginning, right? And JJ has the arm to do that. If you want to single up his receiver on the outside, that's going to be, you know, Roman Wilson. Do you really want to single that guy up with any cornerback in college? So, I mean, the bottom... The very lowest that they can get is just running mesh all day with JJ, and that'll be fine.
Well, I hope, you know, well, we'll see. I mean, at this point, we really don't know. I mean, we had no spring. We have no, we have, we don't even don't have rumors at this point. So all we know is that McNamara is ahead of everyone, or ahead in the room at this moment. And that's what we expected in the first place. So.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Harbaugh is actually coaching the quarterbacks here. I know we hired Weiss.
Weiss is the quarterback, is technically the quarterback coach.
Yes, but Weiss was a running coordinator, and he was brought in, I think, to give us a lot more of our because Michigan's motions did not really, they were just kind of tacked on last year. And what the Ravens do, if you look at the Ravens' running offense, what makes them so great, and there's a great video by Brett Coleman out there that I recommend to everybody about this. I think he was actually talking about the Chiefs because he was saying the Chiefs were stealing the Ravens' ideas. But they just use a ton of motion before the snap with very different guys, so it's really hard to get numbers. And those motions work in other ways to open other things up for the offense, to make the receivers get better matchups for them and everything. So the way that they pre-plan, the way that they pre-snap affects a lot of how the Ravens run their offense. And I think Harbaugh saw some of the things on there, and, you know, Harbaugh's always got an eye on whatever Greg Roman's doing, right? Like, he's even when he goes full speed in space, he's always kind of, you know, he's got his eye on that. But I don't know if Weiss is a quarterback's coach, so I'm guessing that Harbaugh is probably doing that.
I mean, he worked with the quarterbacks for a couple of years in Baltimore too, so he does have some experience. But Jim's gonna have his hand in it, and Weiss, yes, part of the reason he was brought in was to, as Sam has discussed, the Ravens' run game. But then he does remind everybody that it will not be exactly the Ravens' run game because the Ravens have Lamar Jackson.
Yes. But you can run that. I mean, Lamar Jackson turns your 7-yard quarterback scramble into a 70-yard, you know, ridiculous event.
Yes, as a Ravens fan, I love watching those very much.
Right. Right. And Michigan is not going to get that, but I mean, the 7-yard run is normally fine, right?
All right, guys, I want to get a little bit of basketball in here in our last 10 minutes as we continue with the roundtable on Sports Talk 1050, WTK, the ticket online at WTK.com. The Pistons do have the number one pick. I'm coming for that number one spot. So Sam's really excited about that. But here locally, we're focused more on the Michigan side of things, obviously. After the Pistons make the pick, they're going to take Cade Cunningham. That's a foregone conclusion. Where does Franz go? Maybe later on, where does Isaiah Livers go? He's now fully healthy, according to his agent. Is there a chance that Shondi Brown could be a late second-round pick? Because that's definitely a possibility as well. I assume you'll be at least paying a little bit of attention tonight, Seth, to see where our guys go.
Sure. I mean, I've heard that Franz might actually go as high as 4 now. I know Golden State's probably going to take him at 7 if he's available there, because he just fits exactly what they do. But
we're trying to figure out how much. So Sam down at the NBA PA Top 100 camp was talking to some scouts, and they were starting to ask questions about that. Orlando's asking, will he be there at 5?
Mm-hmm.
You mean he could go 4? And then they said, well, if he's there at 5, would he be there at 8? And the answer is he won't get past 9. No one thinks he gets past 9 with Sacramento. Mm-hmm. You make a really good point about number 7 with Golden State. Orlando apparently really likes him, but I also heard they really like Scotty Barnes. I don't see that, but that's fine. They like that. Scotty Barnes, that's on Orlando. But
yeah.
So Franz is a really intriguing prospect because he's super long, right? He's a future 3-and-D guy. He's already the D guy. A great team defender, and the 3-point shot just needs refinement. He's shown flashes of being
that's,
a really good
That's
shooter.
The question. I mean, that is the total question with him.
Right.
Because at a floor, Franz is going to make your defense, because he's got that length that a center has, but he's not playing center. So to get that kind of length from a wing, and even like a 3, and a guy who can, you know, he just messes up lanes so much. And mm-hmm. You know, in the NBA, it's not like in college where, like, everyone just has their system. Everyone runs everything in the NBA. So it's really just about who's got the size and who's got the talent and who can move. And Franz is going to make it harder to score on every single time you go down the court on that guy. So that's his floor. And he can score enough to be, you know, your 5th guy on the offense. If they think that they can turn him into a 40% shooter or even a 37% shooter, that is a very intriguing pick, because he's got offensive skills beyond just being there, right? He can pass.
The shots do fall, he's not just a shooter, right?
Yeah.
I say this all the time. I've told this many times. When I work with John Thompson, he told me, and this is whether you're recruiting from high school to college, obviously a different level, or you're going from college to the pros, can you start with one thing that is elite? Because if you have one skill that is elite, that's a starting point to making a really good player or a great player or whatever the category is. And Franz defensively already starts at that point. I mean, he's got God's gifts of those long arms. I don't know unless someone was like pulling his arms when he was a kid to make him longer, which I think works because I had people pulling my legs. It didn't work. I'm still short. So he has that part of it. And then he has the makings of, as you said, a lot of other parts to it. Craig, what do you think about Franz moving on?
Well, I don't think Franz can escape Golden State. He's sort of Draymond Green without the psychosis. And so I would say that, there's so much to like about his game. He's a good passer. He handles it well enough for a 6'9 guy. I think his ball handling can get better with some work, but I don't think it's poor by any stretch of the imagination now. He's young. He's on a huge uphill. I mean, the difference between his freshman year and sophomore year was just remarkably profound. He made huge strides. He obviously worked very hard on his body and his game. He clearly cares about the game. I can't imagine him going beyond 7 because I can't imagine Golden State looking at him and saying, oh, no, oh, yeah, because he's exactly what they want. And so given that, there's certainly an opportunity that he might go sooner. But if I had to, make a guess, I'd guess Golden State 7 is when he goes. And I love Franz's game. The only weakness is his shooting mechanics are not great, in my opinion. I've never thought they were great. But he is 6'9", so you can get away with a little bit of a low release, and it's something you can get better at. So, and someone just said, hey, he needs a higher release. Exactly. And that's part of the problem.
What are your guys' thoughts on Isaiah as an NBA prospect?
Well, I think he's a definite NBA prospect. I mean, he can he is, I think, about 6'8". He's a physical 6'8". He can shoot the corner three. We know that. So I definitely see him as a 3-and-D guy. And there's a spot for him in the NBA, in my opinion. I would guess he'll be a little underrated, but he'll go maybe around 50. He'll go right near Wieskamp, who's also a very underrated player from Iowa. I don't see Garza as making much noise in the NBA, but I think Joe Wieskamp might. And I think there's a spot there for Isaiah Livers. And you mentioned Shondi. I mean, I'm not sure he'll get drafted, but I see some NBA potential there. He can shoot, again, the corner three. He plays hard on defense. I'm just not sure how he fits because I'm not sure he's a good enough ball handler to play the two in the NBA. But I'm certainly, if I have an opportunity, I bring him into my camp and see what I can do with him and stash him in the G League for a year and see how it goes.
Yeah, I mean, Shondi is going to give you. We'll go to Livers first. Yeah, he is. Guys like Livers are. There's like 200 of those guys. So then the question is, who gets to stay on the end of a roster? And I think a guy like Livers, because of his personality, has a bit of an edge on a lot of other people who have that kind of talent, who were maybe 5-star wings when they came into the. Because that's the level of talent he has. Like the guys who get rated a 5-star, a top 25 kind of player coming into college just because they have that athleticism. Livers has that. He's not ever going to be I don't think he's going to be part of a top 5 rotation for like a competitive team. But when you get it to like which one of the 200 guys like Livers that you want on your team, who's going to be that guy for you? Because everyone needs one or two. I mean, Livers is an easy choice just because he's such a great teammate, and so many people like him. So,
well, he's going to be successful in life, regardless of whether it's the NBA or not. Because anyone who's seen him in an interview realizes how confident how engaging, how smart the kid is. And, you know, so, yeah, yeah. I mean, he, in terms of his personality and as a teammate, he's what you want.
Yeah. And then, you know, Sean D, also a good teammate. You're right. Like his he can play defense very, very well. It's up to certain levels. I don't think that he can get up to fours in the NBA. So he's a two or a three. You are what you can guard. He can shoot. He can get his shot off really fast, and that's another skill that I think the NBA kind of they underrate it when they're putting their rosters together. And then you look around and be like, who can get a shot off on this team, right? Who can actually get if we're behind, who can we bring in? To give us that kind of and that is not the role that he played in college at all until maybe late in the playoffs, and like Michigan all of a sudden needed him to do that. But that is a role that he could play in the NBA. So I don't know if you even need the G League for that, because he could be a microwave for any team right now, just because it's not just the accuracy on your shots, how fast can you get it off? And Sean D can get that thing up.
Yeah, I'm gonna apparently Steve thinks that Isaiah Livers is a 6'8" version of me. I don't shoot the ball.
Truer words were never said.
I don't shoot the ball that well.
And a little bit more hair too, Ira.
Yeah, it's not hard. That's really easy. Anyone on Ticket TV can tell that that's not hard to have more hair than me. All right, Seth, we're just about out of time, so I want to give you one more chance. Tell everybody about Hail to the Victors as the Kickstarter is just about out.
Yeah, Kickstarter lasts until tomorrow night, so you got to get on it now, because I only printed a few limited number of copies. Great lineup of features this year. I wrote most of the previews. I got super in-depth. Everyone just saw that I did upon further review of Michigan's the offense versus Michigan State. I went there. I did that. I did that because I wanted to see Eric All at his blocking best, and it's legit. Eric All can block. So, I mean, we go through every single play, and that's what informs where we come. And this is on the opponents too. We watch every single play and grade every single play in order to know what these guys do. And it's kind of analysis that you're just not going to get anywhere else, because no one else is going to put in this much time into telling you and then distilling it down. So, you know, I know it's late, and I apologize for it being late this year. There are a lot of circumstances that caused that. It's not going to be happening every year. But it's going to be just as good as any other copy you've ever gotten before, and I'm really proud of the work we did on it.
Go to MGoBlog. You can read Craig and all the other great information that's in there. Craig and Seth, appreciate your time as always, fellas. We'll see you next week. And thanks, everybody, for watching and listening. You've been listening and watching to the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA Ann Arbor, a Cumulus station.